welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Burl. My co-host, Burl Love, is here with me.
So we have a very special edition of the podcast. Momentarily, we are going to beam ourselves from 312 Plum, the lavishly appointed studios of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, to an even better studio, as I have to admit, in Fairfield. And I'm talking about the home of WJJI. Do you know what that is, Sherry?
I do now.
Our very special guest is none other than Jim Bonomino, a.k.a. Jungle Jim. So we're going to jump very quickly into our special guest segment, which we recorded live in front of an audience gathered outside the studio there. So, but before we do that, just very quickly, Sherry, help me understand something that popped into the news this week. We have different districts downtown. Everybody knows the Banks. That's its own little unique area. Happens to also be a DORA, a designated outdoor refreshment area.
Nice. AKA, I still have to look that up every time I write
AKA, it. AKA, you can drink and walk around outside. Okay. We all obviously have, you know, the theater district around the Aronoff. We have OTR, which is a dining and entertainment and residential district in and of itself. And now we have the Fountain District.
Yes, it's really a branding move by 3CDC, who's doing a lot of the work in what this Fountain District is. Like, this is around the Foundry and the old Saks building. Well, and of course, Fountain Square, where it gets its name. I probably should have started
Square,
with
that. And the Foundry, a.k.a. where Macy's was.
And it's really, it is a branding initiative, but it's to make it easier for residents to get around. Like, where are you in the city? And, you know, they're working on this now ahead of the convention center that it just closed last week or today. Just closed. I've lost track of my dates. Last week for the 18-month redo. But when that reopens, like, we're going to be having all of these conventions, and it's really going to be, you know, sending people into this district. So it's important to get this branding like ahead of things now. And most major cities have these kind of districts for dining and everything.
Right, yeah.
And so you mentioned some, but I don't think they're all as branded. I mean, OTR is a neighborhood.
Right.
And, you know, and the Banks is not really its own neighborhood, but it is a gigantic development.
But people know what that means.
They
if
do.
You say,
they do.
You
and
know,
that's the plan
right.
here.
Just to give it an
area.
Identity and okay.
So.
Well, that makes sense.
You know,
so I nailed what a DORA was.
You
and
did.
You just dropped 3CDC. Can you nail what that is?
Cincinnati Center City Development Corporation.
That's right. Ding, 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 ding.
That one is also very hard. And I do to say, I might have actually said it right, I think. I do check it every single time.
You gave me a
That's
great...
That's one of the things I check.
Oh, absolutely. You gave me a great idea for a Cincinnati.com Inquirer quiz. Can you identify all of our various alphabet soup acronyms that we have in town?
I'll help you with that.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of fun, we're going to beam ourselves to Fairfield and talk to Jungle Jim.
Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. I've said this before, and I mean it again. We have a very special guest today.
Very special
very
guest.
Very Cincinnati.
And I feel like we're the guests because we're not in our studio.
This is true.
We are in the studios of WJJI.
What does that stand for, Burl?
Jungle Jim's International, I guess, right?
Yeah, WJJI. That's
and
it.
Our special guest is none other than Jungle Jim himself, Jim Bonomini.
Yeah, this is probably going to, I don't know how many different countries this is going right now, so...
This might be the first time that we are international.
Yeah, well, you're international. It's going across, I don't know how many continents and stuff. So be careful what you say because, you know, we probably have it being translated in about 20 different languages right now.
Is that true or is that...
What do you mean is that true?
Because I have heard you described...
You think
he's
we're
a
in
journalist.
A debate right now? Is that true?
No, I've heard you described as the P.T. Barnum of produce. You are the showman.
So, because we're actually not recording video at the moment, but I think that we should start with some descriptions.
All right.
We really are. This is Not that ours is not a real podcast studio, but ours is just in the Inquirer newsroom. But this is very official. Call letters on the wall. It's very Jungle Jim's. It's very
over the
colorful,
top.
Over the top. Has a lot of special touches.
Well, let's
touches.
Set the scene. While we were waiting for you to arrive, we're in your studio, and there's windows that look out to the store, and there's already people gathered outside because they know you're going to be here. And you
Maybe
roll in.
You
roll in wearing a blue wizard's robe. I was expecting you to be in the safari hat.
Yeah.
That's another one of your personas.
An but, amulet.
Amulet and the big blue wizard hat.
Don't even, the ambulance. Oh, I should have never sold the ambulance.
Oh, I was talking about
she said amulet, but you
I had an ambulance. Oh, my God.
You
never
did?
Should have sold. You're on in your, go ahead. You want
was it outside or inside?
The ambulance? Mm-hmm. It was outside. It was a real ambulance.
Well, we're going to get into all the things here,
but yeah.
So we're waiting to start the recording, and at first you had to greet your fans, and they knew you right away because you did arrive on brand with your wizard outfit on. And like I said, I expected the safari outfit.
Okay. Well,
if I didn't have the wizard outfit or some outfit, you'd be surprised how many people don't know who I am.
Well,
I mean, you'd be surprised. I mean, when you walk around like this, people are going to notice. Come on, who's this crazy guy?
So you kind of undercover boss it, though, and walk around the store? And
you know, I could really do that now. I mean, a long time ago I couldn't do it, but I could really do that now.
Well, we saw you in action. The first thing you did when you came into the studio is you told Lucky, who was working for us today, that the table needed to be fixed. And you told us that's what you do now. You walk around and you describe a day in the life right now for you.
Well, I run the store, but my passion really is building crazy things out of everybody's leftovers. And that's my passion. So I can go probably through this whole store and tell you where things came from. And nobody knows because we take it and alter it and change it. And I can go through this whole store and tell you that. That's what I really do. Next door, I have a little construction crew. We have a whole shop next door. We do welding. We do everything. And that's what I do. That's my passion. I think this. I run this store in a secondary thing.
Well,
I mean, I can tell you. You see this desk right now?
I'm not surprised you said that because for our listeners who've been under a rock and don't know the Jungle Jim story, you started in the 70s with a produce stand on Route 4.
I started with a little produce stand on Route 4.
In this spot, right?
No. Across from Fisher Body.
Okay.
Down the street, right? There was an empty field. And I was lucky enough way back then. I had a stand in Hamilton that was a little used car lot. And they wouldn't let me do anything. It was like no roof, no nothing. Have to have an architectural permit and everything. So when I moved to Fairfield was lucky enough. I sat down with the building department. And I said, listen, I can't build anything permanent. I says, you let me put a little shack up. And I says, in 2 years, I'll either leave or I'll build something. And they said yes. And that was really, have a temporary building permit. I was out in the middle of the field. And how we got our water, we had portlets. I had to go to the bathroom.
You still have portlets, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah, I know.
We'll get into that later.
A different portlet. But then what I needed to do was I needed water. So I went next door, and lucky enough, the guy, I said, listen, is there any way that you could bring a hose? We could run a hose over across the field and into the, fruit market. He goes, yeah. I said, I don't use that much water, but I do need water. And we started across from Fisher Body. And that's one of the places we started.
You never know till you ask. Never hurts to ask.
Right. And it's amazing. If I would have, way back when I started this, I mean, my advertising was a chalkboard. I would walk up and down Route 4. I had a chalkboard, and I'd have a bucket of chalk. And if you take chalk, I know, get into particulars. But if you take chalk and stick it in water and leave it in water, it becomes like a milky thing. Mm-hmm. So I actually made all the advertisements. I would walk up and down Route 4. I had 4x8 sheets of plywood for signage, and I would put I would put plums, 39 cents, whatever. And that's what we did across from Fisher Body. But then the other you want to start in the beginning. So anyway, I said, my gosh, you know, the big, I'm in Fairfield. You know, the big business is where the population is in Cincinnati. I should open up too. So what we did was we rented an old gas station on Wooster Pike, right on the line between Wooster Pike and, I mean, what's that? I don't know. I'm trying to think the city. Right by the big boy, the big main big boy out there.
The mainliner.
Mainliner, yeah. Right there.
So we that's
one block away from that.
Marymount.
Right, Marymount or
yeah, Marymount.
East End.
Right
yeah.
on the border, mm-hmm. right? So we just, the gas station was closed. It was a mess, right? So the people said, hey, kid, I said, if I could rent this, I says, just let me know because if you sell it, I'll leave. And I, you know, sometimes when you're young and you start out in college and stuff, you know, some of the bigger people that run places, sometimes they feel a little bit for the kids starting out. All right, kid, go ahead. So I had it. And when we lived in a gas station. Yeah. And we had bunks, you know. And when I was in college, I said, it came up to me, people came, they said, what are you doing? I said, I'm opening up a fruit market. Well, you need marketing. I says, I can't pay you people. I says, you know. And then another guy says, well, who's going to keep your books? I says, come on board, right? So there we are living in a gas station. We had a stove, and we got a propane tank.
And ooh, you know, food.
Yeah, and you know, the gas station where they work on the cars, they have the lifts. Well, we just built a little kitchen in there, all right? So then, you know, romance started. You know, these guys that came from Miami wanted, the girls started coming. They all wanted to work. You know, so I said, hey, hang some sheets. What do you want me to do?
Like you're still in college.
You hang some sheets. I mean, you know, I'm not going to. So the problem with every place that I moved to temporarily, guess what the main problem was?
Space.
No, you got an idea? Come on.
What, zoning. Zoning.
Now, wait a minute. You think about it. You got 6-7 people living in a gas station, right?
The facilities?
Yeah.
And
then we lived in a used car lot, a small used car lot. There's a little building. Inside the building, there's two little offices and a bathroom. What is missing for long-term occupancy?
I mean, if you shower. Got food in the bathroom.
There you go. A shower, bath. What do you do? So we went in the old gas stations, if you remember, that you would sit there and you would walk around the outside to go to the bathroom. You guys probably don't remember that, but that's the old gas stations, right?
Right.
So we had two bathrooms back there. So we went in one of them and I said, well, let's take the worst one, rip out the toilet, put a head up there, and take a shower. That was it.
Walk-in shower.
How long did you live like that?
I think we had that thing for maybe 2 years.
So
it was fun.
Low
you know, when you're young,
it was
you know,
fun.
You don't care when you're young. It was great. I mean, it was wonderful. We're living in a gas station. It was great. We had bunks. Of course, me being a senior, I had the bottom bunk. The one on top, if you slept, you know, I mean, you could fall. We got them from Miami University. There were used bunks that we stacked, you know. But that's how we started.
I went to college.
So were you operating a produce stand on Route 4 and the one on Wooster Pike at
Route
the same
4,
time?
We had that over there. And okay. I thought that was going to be the big one because of the fact that's all the population. Marymount, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then I would leave there and I would come over here in this field in Fairfield and open up the little stand. It was nothing. And then that one over there started, it was crap, and this one here took off.
And when you say take off, that's the understatement.
In
the current, where we are right now, this massive complex, your international market.
That has the old stand of it. It's just a little section.
Right.
Well, the old stand you see was like fantastic. It was like 5 and 6 years after. That little roof was so important to keep out the sun. I mean, that roof was big. And I remember we used to have garage doors for air. And I remember when I got enough money to put in air conditioning. Oh my gosh, was that wonderful.
So you said it took years. It just started to build. And going back to what you said earlier about you run a international market, but you also like to build. You like to take old stuff and make it new. That is what you see when you come into jungle gyms. I wanted to ask you about a few things, starting with the animatronics. Yes.
Well, let's
When did you decide, you know what? I need to have a animated Elvis bear singing songs in my candy department. Like, how did
you ask?
Was this a vision you had,
no,
or did it just
no,
sort of happen?
See, I hate to tell you, it's not a vision. It's anything that comes up. It's not a vision. It's just, I run into things. When I run into things, I do things with them. I went to that Chuck E. Cheese. I went to the auction, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, well, I don't know, maybe I can get some chairs. I don't know what I can get. Everybody was buying things, you know, and they were auctioning everything off, but nobody bought the stage. The animatronics, the whole stage.
How much were they? I mean, they're the stuff of childhood memories. They're priceless.
That stuff is so expensive if you have it built.
But what was it like at auction? Was it expensive?
Nobody wanted it.
It is the stuff of childhood memories.
So I bought it all. I mean, we bought everything. I had so many creatures, I didn't know what to do with all these airlines. I mean, we just started cutting stuff, loading everything up.
And you mean the airlines, the pneumatic stuff that runs the...
Computers and everything. Mm-hmm. I had no idea.
Did you have to hire like a technician to be your animatronics operator?
No.
Or did you just figure it out?
Yeah, we just figured it out. And we used to have a lot of them. We not really only have one, but we had... I had a big hippopotamus that played the piano.
Yeah. Do you still have them hidden somewhere?
No. I had that. I had all
what happened
the
to
birds. What?
What happened to the...
Well, I don't know what happened to her. We put her someplace, and then maybe the repairs. I don't know. But that's what happens. I run into things, and then when I run into things, I make them figure out what's going on.
The other...
Did you see this table?
Yeah.
You know where this table came from?
Okay. We're sitting on a black oval table
from,
in the studio.
One of the major department stores. They were having... You know, you go in there and they sell everything. They're closing down. They sell everything, right?
Right.
So I usually
like the fixture sales at the very end.
I usually wait till the last, you know, let them get. Then I walk in and they give me stuff, $5 for this. This was, at one time, this was wood. If you look, then we painted it black and this is this. This is a $5 table.
And it was used by to display like gloves and hats and scarves.
And that's what this is.
So I think one of the most interesting acquisitions you've had is the monorail, which I believe came from Kings Island, the animal safari.
Yeah.
Did you intend to actually have the monorail?
See, there he goes. Intend.
Nothing is intentional.
All right.
Were you hoping that you could have it actually operational, or did you just want it?
No. What happened with the monorail?
Like, you woke up one morning and thought, today I'm going to buy a monorail.
No.
Just did it.
No. That it just came available. So you're missing this. You're thinking I think about this stuff and I have a plan. I do not. All right. What happened with the monorail? This I would go junking at Kings Island. All right. They would call me up and they had a graveyard and I would go there and I would pick out stuff and they would get. I have a bunch of stuff and I could go through the store and show you what it is. Bunch of stuff from Kings Island. And
I would like to do that after.
Oh, you know what? If you guys really wanted to do something down the road, it would be fun to walk through and I could show you where everything comes from.
All right.
I mean, okay.
We're going to do it.
So one day, if you ever, so I never did this, by the way. I've never walked through the store and really talked about where everything came from. All right?
I would love to do that.
So, I mean, little stuff, I got to stand
I mean, Burl was kind of giving me a tour this morning, but I don't feel like
no,
it's the same.
No, they don't know my stuff.
I don't think it's the same.
They don't know my stuff. No.
He did.
No.
I did not realize that the mural by the jelly beans is actually made out of jelly beans. So he did have that fun fact.
Well, yeah, if you just look outside over there, you know all those things up in the air, on the toys? You know what those are? Those are the 25-cent round things that go around in front of all the stores used to be. Because of the liability, they stopped them. Remember the horses and everything?
Mm-hmm. They're not dangerous. It's just like we overthink everything.
That's what all those are. We bought them because nobody wanted them, and we cut the bottoms off. We hung them in the air. Those cars over there came from Coney Island. And
so this is not just a collection. This is almost like a museum of Cincinnati curiosities.
But nobody knows.
But we're going to make sure people know that. That's going to be our quest. That'll
be
your
favorite.
But back to the monorail.
Okay,
back to the monorail.
Yeah.
So I go junking. I go junking, and I pick up a lot of stuff. So then one time I really, they had Days of Thunder with the cars.
Yeah.
So I says, oh, I like to have the cars. So I bought all the cars and we have them around the place and stuff. So that's the cars. What are you looking at your watch for?
Well, we have a podcast we're recording. I want to make sure we like get all our questions in before we have to stop.
You want me to talk about the monorail?
Yeah.
Okay. So absolutely. I go junking. So then I went over there and they were walking me around. They showed me the balloon ride or I don't know. I said, I don't want that. I don't want this. I says, I'm leaving. He says, I said, do you have anything weird that you, a guy like me would not even think about getting? He says, yeah. I says, what? So they bring me in the train yard. My God, 11 trains and a big building and everything that, you know, in Kings Island, anytime you have these rides, they have to send, they strip them down and they send the frame to be like x-rayed every year to make sure liability, right?
Right. Safety of the,
yeah. So I looked at this and I go, I said, what do you want for this thing? I said, 500,000. I said, 500,000? I says, where's the track? And they said, well, we scrapped the track. This is corporate. Don't you love corporate? I mean, don't you love them? I says, you want me to buy a train, but you sold the track? I said, I don't want it. So they kept on lowering the price, lowering the price, right?
So we started at $500,000.
Yeah, $500,000. They lowered the price, kept on. I said, I don't want it. So then they started getting to 100,000, whatever. So then I brought the architect, the electrician, everybody, and they go, oh my God, don't touch this. Don't touch it. I says, you're right. I don't want to touch it. I'm crazy. Come on, just get in the car and drive back. So we're driving back. I get a call from Kings Island. A dollar. I said, a dollar?
Just get it out of here.
I'll buy anything for a dollar, right? It took me probably $1.5 million to $2 million to get those trains in, to build the train yard, to start building track. I mean, it was totally crazy, but...
You preserved a
nobody
piece
has
a
monorail but Disney.
Right.
Right?
That's right.
So then that was.
So you.
Does it work?
So what you're saying
what
is.
Mean, does it work?
All right, that was the wrong question. Here's a better question. Can we ride it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we have parties up in the Oscar, and then we have the bourbon bar over there.
Right.
Sometimes people will book a big event and they'll use that after afterburn or before the party. So then they all get in a monorail, they unload over there and it goes back and forth.
Well, Burl, I'm booking the next Inquirer Christmas party. It's already set.
Go ahead.
But then with the monorail, there's only one problem. Back in the jungle over there in Kings Island,
right.
Well, the track was electrified. So the train got the juice from the track. So God only knows what that juice was.
Probably a lot, the third rail of a subway.
Right. So I could not use it over here. I mean, what would I do if someone just walked in or close to it? I mean, get fried. Yeah. So we got a hold of this guy, an engineer to work for General Dynamics. He came over and we showed him what we're doing. And they took the project. I was on the cover of their thing. They took this project on. I think they did it for free. They actually changed all the motors from, I don't know what.
So it's self-driving now?
Yeah, it's self-driving.
That's great.
Yeah. So anyway, that's how the monorail came on.
So another thing he's repurposed.
You got to clear up some of this stuff.
Well, I'm glad. We're here to do that.
So all these rumors, and we need to clear up this stuff.
Yeah. Well, talking about repurposing, he mentioned the bourbon bar at the Oscar, your Oscar Event Center, which, by the way, we should talk about. Coming up next month, you have, what is it called? Weekend of Fire.
Okay.
You probably don't know. Your people handle that now, right? Anyway,
it's
I'm excited.
Yeah, when I said we were doing this, a lot of people asked me about that.
Right.
But so it's not just the market. You have the event center, and as part of the Oscar, you have the bourbon bar. In the bourbon bar, Sherry, if you order a bottle, it's going to arrive to the bartender on this track, which is a reconfigured dry cleaning. You know what the old school dry cleaner, they still have them.
I'm familiar with dry cleaning, bro. You've seen how I dress.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, you hit the button and the track runs around and brings, you know, the your shirts and pants out. That's what brings the bourbon out. And on a birthday I was celebrating there, I decided to go big and I had never tried Pappy Van Winkle and
are big.
I know, right?
Happy birthday.
Right. Uh-huh. So it was like $75 a shot.
God bless you, my child.
Yes. I'm here to support you. So when I ordered it, a hush fell over the crowd. Everybody's like, he ordered the Pappy. And it was so, it was like a theatrical moment because it wasn't just here, you know, grab the bottle off the shelf. This thing goes, and the bottle takes this journey all the way from wherever it was on this track. So I'm just... Again.
Were you with Lauren?
Yes, I was with Lauren.
Did she have a shot?
I'm starting to like him better now.
Yeah. See, I knew you'd warm up to me. But I got to ask the tough questions, you know, like, so again.
You know why I built that bourbon bar?
I want to know why and also.
So I could use my dry cleaning rack. That's why I built it. You want to know the truth?
Like, yeah.
If you would look at that bar, that bar is all made out of scrap.
Yeah.
It's all made out of scrap. The guardrail. The stuff in the front, it's all made out of scrap. And that was, and the beams above came from a World War II plant that was in Hamilton that they tore down. Everything's made out of scrap.
So you have the bourbon bar, which is not in the market prop, but you have added a beer area, which I think probably is one of the only places I know where you can go get a draft beer. Some local, some, you know, from all over the place, and enjoy that beer while you shop. That's brilliant.
We almost got one this morning.
I mean, the bar,
the day before the 4th of July. Let's start early. Yeah.
Recently, we just opened up the liquor, too, because we started thinking about things. Are we okay? Am I all right talking?
Yeah, you're all good.
All right. So we just did that because we're looking. I'm thinking, what? People come in, they don't like beer. I don't like beer. I don't drink beer, right? I drink some whiskey. So we opened that up for a little bit.
For tastings and...
Yeah, then we turned around...
Which, by the way, is right next to the humidor.
Yeah. Yeah, then we put the slushy machines in there for people, just trying to accommodate, but not everybody likes beer. I mean,
I'm a Bloody Mary person. Like, I would walk around the store with a Bloody Mary.
We're going to start doing that. That's going to be our next project. We're going to find out some of the mixed drinks that people like, and we're going to...
Like on a Saturday morning? Totally.
Yeah. See, so we don't have that. You could be having a Bloody Mary right now, and you don't have it because I don't have it.
So I know you've been trying to make me understand that you don't have a plan, that you just, it reminds me of the famous Yogi Berra quote, what? When you get to a fork in the road, take it.
Yeah, that's me.
That's you.
Yeah.
But you've got to have some sort of like, what's cooking in your head right now? What might be the next thing you do to this place?
Well, right now, believe it or not, we have headhunters out right now, and we're bringing people in from different parts of the country that have different things to offer. We just brought a gentleman from Chicago, and he's like was the head buyer of 5 different stores like mine, and he's bringing new things in. We just brought in a meat man from New Orleans. We're concentrating on more of the inside. That's what I'm doing right now. Concentrating on the best meat market, the best seafood, on and on. That's hard to do.
We saw a chef walk in this morning early. Like a chef was clearly coming here to buy.
We're doing internally because I see that we could. When you see other stores in the country that are just fantastic at different departments, we're trying to upgrade our different departments in the store.
Department by department.
Yeah. Now that's one thing, right? Now, with that is we just bought the radio station behind me, and that is 9 acres, and we got another 4 acres, so we have about 15, 16 acres attached to one of the busiest grocery stores in the United States. So people, same thing what you're asking. What's your plans? I know nothing. Thing. Who is that? Schultz? I know
from Hogan Zero.
I feel like
Hogan
you do know something.
Yeah.
We like when our guests break news on our podcast.
Do.
Yeah.
Right. And that's where we just did that. So what am I doing right now? I'm gonna talking to different people and then on the air, let me know. I mean, what do we have going? We have the busiest grocery store 22nd in the United States.
Right? I just read that somewhere.
We could do something. I have the traffic and we have the ground. So now I'm waiting for people then to come forward with some ideas. The city says, well, we're going to do something. We're going to do a drawing for apartments and stuff, you know, with event, you know. I said, whatever. I said, you know, another architect called me, said, I got some investors that maybe want to do a indoor hockey. So for all you people out there, if you have any ideas, I'm open.
All right, here's mine, because I love just talking about things. I think you should have an RV park, because then people travel the country in their RVs, and this could be a destination for them, and have some place to stay. The van life, the RVs, this is a whole...
I think this is one of the probably only, you call yourself a grocery store, international market, that when you go to the website, it has links for nearby hotels. Because people
right.
travel. When I pulled in the parking lot today, I was across from a car that had Pennsylvania license plates. To the left to me was an Indiana car. You draw from all over.
Right. Yeah, they come from all over. You know, I was looking at a hotel, but I don't like all the strings attached to these franchise.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, I don't need another wife. I mean, I'm married one time for 50 years. We're together. I don't need any contracts, you know. Now, so that's another thing out there in business land. If somebody wants to build a hotel and have it be private, I think we could design a fun hotel and have it be
yeah.
private. In other words, I don't want all those people coming in and telling me every 5 years change the carpeting and do this and do that.
You'd have more room for all of the things
right.
that you have.
I even thought the hotel would be really cool if you had different floors. And like, for instance, if you're a wine person, you could, one floor was designed for the wine.
You don't need my ideas. I just
and
do
one,
this.
Yeah, one floor would be more for if you like to cook and stuff. But I thought that'd be so fabulous. All these people come here, book in, and walk. I mean, so we still might do that, but I need to team up with somebody. I don't want to, those are big numbers. I don't want to.
Yeah.
You know, those are big numbers for me to take on. Team up with somebody. That'd
but
be
in today's world of experiences, Trump, things, like, I just feel like there's a market for that. All right, I'm going to tell you a little bit about my origin story because it overlaps with yours. I don't even know if you know this. I might have mentioned it in passing before. I moved to Cincinnati after college, and I lived in Fairfield. And I worked at a fraternity magazine, but I really wanted to be a newspaper reporter. But places like the Plain Dealer and the Cincinnati Inquirer were like, you need 5 years experience, so get it together. So my parents insisted that I take a job. I don't know why. They thought I should be making money and not looking for a newspaper job.
Gee, what a concept. Gee, what a concept. Your parents, what's wrong with you?
I moved here. Coming here was one of the first things I did. And I do have all of the memories of that. I'm here all by myself. I don't know anybody. And like just coming here was special and gave me an understanding of this. Now, 3 weeks in, I did get a call and I got offered a newspaper job. And my parents said, no, you may not take that job. You already have one and we moved you to Fairfield, Ohio. But my best friend's like, no, you can go ahead and take it. So I went and I moved and I worked at the Lorraine Morning Journal. And that was my first real job. And I loved it. And I lived in Lorraine. Where you're from, and I loved working for the newspaper there.
Oh, my gosh.
That's my little origin story. Did you know this, Pearl?
The Journal. You worked at the Journal in Lorraine, Ohio?
From, I hate to age myself, but 1995 to 1998, I was the police reporter. I was supposed to be the feature writer, and I come in, and the police reporter quit the night before. It's like hard scrabble and, you know, a lot of, like, fast-paced, small newspaper. And they're like, you're the police reporter. And I was like, no, I don't think that's really what I want to do. And the editor, John Cole, was like, I did not ask you a question. I told you something. He's like, the police department is a block away. And that is how I became a reporter.
So,
Lorraine, Ohio.
Yes.
Hey, go get some water. Oh, you have it here? Man, see, what do I know?
So, did you leave Lorraine to come to Miami?
Yeah.
So you went the other way.
Yeah.
We went the other way.
Yeah, we were anything. I don't care. I'm a drink.
Sorry.
So, no, what happened was I was Admiral King, went to Admiral King in Lorraine, and all of a sudden the baseball coach there at Admiral King did such a fantastic job. We had such a lousy baseball program. He did such a fantastic job that he got the job at Miami University, head coach, Bud Middle. And when he went there, he took a lot of the ball players from Admiral King, and that's how I ended up over here. And he had to pull all the strings because my grades weren't there. You know how that is, huh? Old sports.
I feel like you're a creative.
Oh, yeah. I was at Miami for 5 years. Never graduated.
Are you in their, like, Hall of Fame somehow? Have they given you, you know, honorary degrees?
Yeah, they should give you the honorary degree by now.
Yeah, he wanted to do that. And he wanted me to come back to school. And I said, I'm not coming back to school. I said, I'll do some talks over there, but I'm not coming back to school. I had a good time, but.
Yeah.
But now it changed. That was Vietnam War. Everybody was in schools to get out of the war.
Okay.
They were graded on the curve. Now Miami, to get into Miami, you got to be some smart.
This is true.
That's different. We were.
Right.
Well, we're glad you're here. But Lorraine, I think, was probably a great place to grow up. It was good people. Good people.
Yeah, international city. Lorraine's an international city.
So you were talking about all the things you do. I was imagining that you must have some key people that help you run this, but probably one of their biggest jobs is to just keep up with your ideas. Keep you out of trouble, keep you focused, keep you...
Yeah, but...
How many...
What we really, you know, what we do in this store, really what we do in this store is I hire people with a passion in what they like, okay? And then I back them. I'm the umbrella. We do all the counting, we do all the stuff, you know, so you could concentrate on what you love to do. And I back people. In other words, we interviewed for Mark for this position. I said, I want to build you know how I built this, why I built this thing?
No.
I have a flip phone. I know absolutely you can't call me. I don't have any kind of...
You don't text?
I don't text, no email, nothing. A little flip phone. And for you to call me, I have to put your number in my phone or you can't call me. So I just hire people with a passion and I back them. And I said, you know, here's what happened with this podcast. A friend of mine called me up and says, we have a podcast. Would you like to go? And I says, what is it? And he goes, well, you're just sitting bullshit. And I says, well, I could do that. So I come over in this place. We did this yesterday, right? And all of a sudden, the ratings came out. He goes, holy macro, you're better than Jungle Jack from Jack Hanna.
Oh, Jack Hanna from the Columbus Zoo.
Yeah. He said, you have more ratings than him. And I said, well, I said, you know the old thing, new broom sweeps clean?
Okay.
I says, have me on again. Maybe that was a fluke. So we did it again. It was still good. So I said, podcast. So I started, I looked on YouTube. I know that much, on YouTube. I'm looking on YouTube and I see all these podcasts. They're always in the back rooms. They're in a closet. You know what I mean? Nobody's marketing podcast things. Nobody's marketing podcasts. They're always, you know, I says, I'm going to build a studio. I'm going to take podcasts and market it. And that's what I did. I said, I put it right in the front, did glasses so people come in. So that's what I did, and that's where we're sitting here.
Well, why wouldn't you have your own studio in a international market to go along with everything else you have?
Yeah,
it's like you're the multimedia guy. It's not just about we were talking about earlier. It's the experience.
It is
the experience. How many employees do you know roughly? How big of
That's a bad subject.
Oh, okay.
That's overhead. Oh.
Pearl knows about that.
But just so people get an idea of how big.
When you went for the water, I should have told you to give me an Alka-Seltzer. Where are you going to start talking about that kind of stuff? I need a Bromos.
No, I don't want this to become a hard-hitting business podcast.
Yeah,
episode.
You don't want to do that because
but just,
I'm the
just
wrong
so
guy.
People have an idea of how truly what a presence you have here.
A store.
Yeah.
300, 400 store.
And we should mention, we're at the Fairfield location. You have the location at Eastgate as well. What was it like when you told your team that you wanted to open up in Eastgate? Was there any pushback? Was there, what are you doing? You've got a good thing going here. Can lightning strike twice?
Pushback from who?
Anybody.
No, I never get pushback.
Never?
Oh, I love to get pushback.
Definitely
I love
not people. From the east side. It was like cheers galore.
No, I stress that with all the people, the managers and everybody works for me, everybody. I says, please, I hired you for what you know and your brains. Don't sit there and be a yes person, because what the hell do I need you for?
That's right.
I need people to say, I like the idea, I don't like the idea, why can't we do this, or scrap it, or I have another one. Then we get together and we talk about it.
Was there concern about, you know, can lightning strike twice? Do you have something so special here that it would
really
be hard to...
You really want to know why I did that?
Yes.
I'll tell you why I did it. First of all, the guy came over, Ken Geis. Eastgate was tumbleweeds and empty buildings before I got there.
Kind of like this place.
It was empty. It was nothing. Ken Geis comes over and I said, I don't want another place. So he kept on coming and coming. And finally, what do you got to offer? Blah, blah, blah. And every time I say, well, I want this and I want that, he'd come back and say, you got it. So after about, you know, I don't know, 8, 9 times, he looked at me and said, do we have a deal? And I go, I guess we do. You know, but what I really did it for was, you know how you have a local pizza place and you kids were all grown up around it and you go... And every time you come from out of town, you go back to the pizza place.
Mm-hmm.
Pizza could be crap, right?
Yes.
But it's in the neighborhood. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I wanted to find out after 30 years of me working or 40 years of me working in a store, did I really have something or not? Was I that little pizza place on the side of the road? Or did I really have something that would bring people in? That's why I did it. Just to prove that I have something to offer.
That this wasn't a fluke.
This was right. That's why I did it. And when we first opened up, man, the crowds, man, were coming in like crazy. I made enough money in the candy department to pay the note. I says, this is easy. Man, I'm gonna open up another one. Holy macro, this is easy, right? So then sales started doing this. They started dropping. And they started dropping, you know. And I'm thinking, I could have got a golf ball and teed off in the wine department and not hit anybody.
In the Eastgate location.
Eastgate, right? So I called this grocery guy up I know, and I said, holy mackerel, I told him what happened. Sales were dropping. He goes, oh, he says, that's a J-curve. I says, thank God it's got a name.
We're back to business school.
That's one good thing.
I thought we weren't going to get into deep business, but here we go. Let's do it.
Yeah, then I said, well, what do you mean? What does it do? He said, well, it goes down. It's a J. Then it starts coming up. I says, well, when's it come up? He goes, you better hope it does.
Not be a flat line.
But now it's kicking. It's really doing good. I think Eastgate, what Eastgate needs is a fantastic meat market, a seafood a shucking thing for oysters. I mean, that store, and it's so big that we have so much room to do different things in there. It's exciting now. But in the beginning, it's like business. That's what I mean. I told my wife, I said, you know, when we first did it, you know, when I started out, we lived in a trailer, a little junk trailer. Me and my wife, that's how we started. A junk trailer.
I mean, she knew what she was getting. You lived in a gas station.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that was my girlfriend. My wife came. My wife came later when I was like, I was elevated. You know, it wasn't a gas station. I actually had a trailer, right? And, I told her, I said, you know, back in the trailer days, did you really hate it that much? She goes, what do you mean? I says, well, you know, all the stuff we have that I've been building for 30 years. I says, it's all on the line right now at Eastgate. At first she goes, oh, I didn't mind the trailer. About 4 days later, she took me aside. She goes, you serious?
Do you have another location in you? No.
You know, it all depends. It all depends on my people. If we're rocking and rolling and I have my departments bustling, and they're saying to me, man, we got a lot of talent here. We don't know what to do. You never know. I might do it.
Have you ever been approached by a community to say, bring one here, please?
I'm always approached by people. I'm always. But I would take a place. It'd have to be a rundown area. and as long as I have access off major highway. And then I would bring in investors. I made a mistake at Eastgate. When I went there, all the real estate was free. I should have got a hold of some people and bought everything around me because it's all skyrocketed. But I didn't. If I had to do it again, I'd take my location and then I would bring in a bunch of people and say, hey, take a gamble, buy everything around me.
So when we wrap up our podcast, we usually, it's called the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and we exchange moments in our, you know, just everyday life that seem to be that so Cincinnati, but I wanted to put a different twist on it here as we wrap up. Can you think about a time when this thing started to blow up and got really big, that it became definitive of what Jungle Gyms is? I know it's a deep question, but
I know it is, because I never look back.
Never look back?
No. I never look back. I never look back. Once in a while, I get these moments, maybe every couple years or whatever, that you do look back a little bit, but I really don't look back. I'm always looking what we're doing in the future and how we're doing things. I never look back.
How would
you should. Really, people should. They should look back and look at things and not beat yourself up all the time, but I never look back.
Well, what would the key people around you say about you? What would they describe the experience?
I don't know. You have to ask them.
Yeah?
You know, what I offer here.
I just got a thumbs up from
that's the only way
Lucky.
To do it. I say the same thing. You want to ask them. What I do here was I offer here, it's unique for people. I offer ownership, real ownership. You hire, you fire, you come up with ideas in your own department. These people take ownership of their department. And what I mean by that is I don't stand over them and say, oh, you're in charge. Oh, wait, what are you doing right there? You can't do that. And that is unique, because a lot of places do not offer that. And so we bring people in that just, one day they're talking to me and says, people that have been here a long time, maybe you should do something special for them, right? And I says, find out how many people have been here 20 years or 25 years. Do something special, right? Well, I got the list. I'm not doing it. I just half of the people here. So this, once you get the jungle bug, you kind of stick around, because you find out that your thought matters, who you are matters. And we need you, and we're a team. So, and they have authority.
It seems very fun to work here too.
And we have authority. They have, when I find out about a mistake, afterwards, after you to make the mistake, we'll find out about it. And again, hey, everybody makes mistakes. You got five. You got five things you got going on. Maybe one's a mistake, the other one is partial, and the other ones are good. That's everybody does that. So we just, hey, what about this award stuff? What do you guys know about that?
What awards are you talking about?
This whole thing that people are congratulating me that we beat Kroger's or something. What was that about? Do you know?
So this was a USA Today partnership. The name is escaping me at the moment, but something like the Grocery Retail Association, something like that, like a very reputable rating organization that looked at the different grocery stores and rated them.
Right.
Like 1 to 100.
Right. Beat Kroger.
And you beat Kroger.
Yeah, see, that's what I mean. And I've been looking and trying to find it on.
So it wasn't just readers. It was like a lot of data.
Right. It was an industry.
A lot of data went into the.
It was an industry ranking.
First of all, Kroger's a fantastic store.
Do you pay attention to the local grocery wars? I mean, you're so outside of
that. I really don't.
Because, write about Kroger versus Publix is now like a thing.
But I really don't. But that guy from Chicago, that's all he does. Because Chicago is a very competitive market. We're not that competitive over here with private. We don't have any private. Chicago has a bunch of still private grocery stores. So they fight like cats and dogs. So he came from an arena that you constantly go to your competition and see what they're doing. Constantly. Me, I never did. Now he came in and he goes to all the stores and checks and everything like that. It's very important. But I never did it. I just went my own way and never paid attention.
What else did we not ask you that we should? That you're like, wow, these two professional reporters didn't even ask me the most important Jungle Jim question. Did we cover it?
We just, you know, nothing's, you know, you look around, you see all the people coming in. And that's why I always want to look forward, because nothing's guaranteed.
Yeah.
You know, it's, we have to try to do better constantly, try to make it more fun for customers to come in. Hey, you know what? Maybe when they voted for me for that award, maybe it's because I give them beer and then shop at beer.
You know.
You know, that might be.
It might have helped.
I get them half looped to shop. Maybe they pick the lever. They keep on pushing the lever, you know. Oh, I like this guy. I like this guy. Has nothing to do with what the produce rate.
You're right.
You
know, I don't think.
What a great place.
It can't hurt.
Yes, exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for your time with us. Very generous. Letting us, you know, you're the guest on our podcast, but we're the guest in your studio here. So we want to thank you for that. We're going to wrap it up and just thank everybody for listening to the That's So Cincinnati podcast, the official podcast of the Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. If you love this podcast, share it with a friend, and also check out, you can find it on YouTube, the official Jungle Jim podcast, where you can find out everything that's going on at Jungle Jim's, including things you don't even know about, like the Weekend of Fire.
I have no idea. No, I'm serious.
August.
What I'm serious is what these people run with it, and a lot of times what they'll do is they'll put it on my schedule, make sure you show up here and there and there.
Can you imagine being
that's
the person who keeps
you,
track of, you're right, right, that keeps track of Jungle Jim and keeps him on schedule?
No,
that's got to be a full-time job.
This thing right here. They said, they put on the thing. I said, what's going on? I didn't know. I said, what do I have to do? They said, just sit there and be yourself. I said, fine, and here I am.
And that is the direction and we gave, is, and you followed it.
And that is perfect. It, right? Well,
and then when you hire great people, that's what you want them to do. And, you know, they run with it, and they call me, and sometimes I'll say, no, I don't want to go. They'll say, no, you have to. Oh. I said, well, what group is it? Oh, I could tell you all kinds of stories.
More good business advice.
I could tell you all kinds of stories.
More good business advice.
Well, you want to hear one quick one? You have to.
Yes. No, all no, right, I mean, no, we're here
so
for you.
So anyway, so an event center, April, she runs an event center, right? Oscar Event Center.
Mm-hmm.
So she calls me, and she goes, you know, at 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock, you know, there's P&Gs here, and it's loaded with engineers and stuff like this. You have to speak. I go, and it caught me off guard, all right? Like, oh, my God. So I got dressed up. I told her, I says, make sure the podium, make sure I have the podium, make sure I have a hookup. She goes, ah, we have that. Make sure there's a little water. I have that. So, and I have a crystal ball. So I dressed up the wizard, I have the crystal ball, right? Mm-hmm. So I go in the bathroom. And there's some people there from P&G in the bathroom, the engineer. I said, hey, what's going on here? And he told me, he says, all engineers, this and that. And I go, man. I say, hey, what's the stock price? They're like 73, you know, whatever.
Procter & Gamble stock?
Yeah, whatever it was, 73, mm-hmm. right? So I'm thinking, it's all these, half of these people are retiring engineers, right? So I got up there, I got my crystal ball, and I said, you know what? I'm not getting paid for this. I says, I'm doing this because you're here at Jungle Jim's, good customer, I'm going to do you a favor. I says, how many people are going to retire? And they start raising that. I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you the future stock price.
With your crystal ball.
Yeah. So I open up the crystal ball and I go, oh my God, this looks good. I says, 6 months, a year from now, to 73. I think it's going to be 85, 86. I says, good luck for you retirees. I says, this is what I'm saying. They started clapping. They thought it was the greatest thing, right? That was it. I said a little something and I left. They thought I was the greatest. I didn't even know what the stock price was.
We're going to have to go see if you were right.
I had no idea. That was like 4 or 5 years ago. So
there's probably some insider trading rules that, yeah.
Know your audience.
Right. Know your audience.
The podium that I spoke on, right? The bottom of the podium was metal and it was curved. And it came from the Winterfest at Kings Island.
Okay.
It used to be this big, huge metal thing that you walked underneath. So when we took it down, we cut it up and we curved and made podium. So anyway.
That's a good
story.
If you
guys ever want to do something, you let me know what's going through here.
Oh, yeah. We're going to, somebody has to document.
For these recycled people, I mean, you know.
Yeah, the reuse, reclaim group.
Just, hey, another thing is they were doing the stadiums, down downtown, mm-hmm. all the stadiums, right?
Right.
Well, way back when, cobblestones were brought in from the ships, and they used them for the bottom of the ballasts.
Okay.
And when they unloaded, they took the cobblestones out. That's why downtowns were the old rivers and mm-hmm. trade. That's why you see all these cobblestone roads.
You can still see a lot of them in Newport.
True.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. So the guy's over there building a stadium, and there's big piles of cobblestones. And I says, oh, I'm going to go. So I got a hard hand. I walked out of the project. And there was this foreman. He looked at me and said, who are you? I said, John Goodrum. He goes, if you're here for the stones, I said, forget it. They're driving me crazy.
Your reputation preceded
right.
you.
I said, you know what? I'm here to do you a favor. I says, how about if I give you about $2,000-$3,000? You stick it in your pocket. You see those loaders? Turn those loaders around. I says, I'll have trucks here. You can get rid of all these cobblestones, and you don't have to worry about it from now on. I called that one company, O'Rourke
Construction.
With the red trucks.
Mm-hmm.
I says, hey, bring them over. Man, I am lined up. We took all the cobblestones out of there. So now if you go here in front of the Oscar Center,
uh-huh.
you'll see we use the cobblestones. We don't put them on the road. We use them, and we use them as bricks. And right now we just got done with a Mercy Hospital over at Eastgate.
Mm-hmm.
And the architect gave me this design. I said, I'm not building that. I said, this is what I'm going to build. I said, I'm going to put cobblestones, red bricks. And I says, what I'm going to do is I will put a bronze plaque. It's on me, showing where everything came from, the red bricks from World War II, cobblestones from recycled, everything. We love that. I said, well, that's what I'm building. So we just finished one over here, and we have one starting in Fairfield in about another month with all the outside being recyclable stuff. After I told him that, he says,
as part of the hospitals?
Yeah. And they loved it when I showed them. I says, these architects, they draw this garbage.
Did the hospitals reach out to you?
They wanted Eastgate location. They wanted one in Fairfield. Mm-hmm. So we just did that one. Now we're doing this one. So next time you come, you'll start seeing footers go up.
Wow.
Yeah.
With your vision.
Well, I just did the outside because.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I just.
That's fantastic.
I'm not going to.
Do you charge them for that?
Yeah.
A consultant?
No, we built it.
Oh, you're building
guys,
it. Your guys are building it.
Yeah,
okay.
We built it.
All right.
Yeah, that's it. So you readers out there, 14 acres. Let me know if anybody has any ideas. Really, I don't know what to do with it. Right now, we're clearing it, and we're going to get it all nice. So
well, Sherry wants a hotel.
The hotel or the RV park?
Yeah, or the RV park.
I would like the hotel, too, as long as we run it privately. And I think, and they tell me, the hotels tell me, oh, you can't do it because all these, if you go there, you get points and all that stuff.
Yeah, the everything. Loyalty programs and things like that.
But I think with the phone and the internet and stuff like this, I think that we can get the word out.
So are you going to get mad if we do a headline for this episode of the podcast? Is Jungle Jim building a hotel? I know it's clickbaity, but.
Well, you could do that, but then put on the bottom, help.
Help.
You could do that, but put help.
All right.
We'll never ask a source.
Oh, editors have different rules than reporters.
Yeah,
so
I would love that. Do me a favor.
All right.
But 14 acres.
All right.
What to do. Have any ideas, contact.
All right. We're going to start a little bit of a buzz, I think.
Yeah.
I think we will.
As long as it's good for the city. I want it good for the city, good for jungles, because what's good for the city is also good for business.
Sure.
We're all in this together, so it's not
and
like.
More cities need to remember that. Cut the
maybe
red
you
tape
should
and
consult between Hamilton County and Cincinnati, because it seems like things are a little more, everybody's got each other's back in Butler and Warren County, but we don't see that in the core of the city.
Hey,
I digress. That's going to, we're going to go down the wormhole
we
with that.
We're going
to
be serious.
We need
today.
To bring this one in. So,
yeah.
So do people call you Jungle or Jungle Jim? Okay. Thank you for spending time with us.
Oh,
we appreciate
you.
It.
This was good.
And that's a wrap.
That's a wrap.